I always wanted to know who the best player was on tour simply because I wanted to actually work as hard. And then I ran into a little guy by the name of George Knutson out of Canada. And I watched him hit the golf ball. I watched him with the wide stance, taking the club back way inside, releasing the club. One of the greatest ball strikers I'd ever seen.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the McKellar Golf Podcast. Before we get on with the show, I quickly want to direct you to mckellarmagazine.com, our website. If you go there, you can purchase a copy of our beautiful, wonderful literary golf magazine. I gave it to a friend over the weekend, and he hadn't seen it before. My goodness, he was blown away. You will be blown away too, I promise. mckellarmagazine.com/shop. My co-host, Jeff Shackelford. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, and you?
Have you recovered from your hosting duties at the Southern California Hall of Fame induction ceremony? It sounds like it was a pretty good occasion.
I have, yeah. It went well. We had no major glitches. I don't think I screwed anything up too badly. We did have a fascinating thing that I had no idea at the time. Callaway bought four tables, and the CEO, Chip Brewer, was there, and all sorts of executives came because Ely Callaway and Roger Cleveland were both going in. And when I sat down to have my In-N-Out burger afterwards, on the way home, I opened my phone and I see that Callaway had to strongly deny a sale rumor in the middle of all this. And to the credit of all the people involved, Lawrence, I could see them all in front of me. And obviously, I'm distracted a little trying to not screw up names and things. And there was no sign, people looking at phones and getting up and moving and whispering. They remained totally, that was just so impressive. And that all went on during the whole ceremony with the CEO and the CMO and all these people there. And they strongly denied it. So maybe it was an easy statement to write for a lawyer and they just sent it to Chip and he said yes. But anyway, there was it was great, and Roger was super. Scott Simpson was super, it was really nice.
I just see a picture of you and Scott Simpson. He's obviously given up the marathon running. Not that I'm sure.
I think he swallowed one of the Hawaiian Islands. He's definitely. I mean, we watched the clips, and he was so slim. And it was funny though. Afterwards, I said, you probably get this a lot, but I was one of those people. I was there with my dad in 80 because he told a bunch of stories. He didn't have a script. He just started telling Bill Murray stories, and then he went a little into his U.S. Open. He was very modest. He didn't mention his other, loss in a U.S. Open playoff to Payne Stewart. He didn't mention his great chance at Pebble Beach, et cetera, et cetera. But he did mention Olympic and talk about that and the scene at 18. And I said, yeah, I'm sure you get this all the time. Everybody and their brother says they were there. And I said, we were there way up the hill. He goes, I had no idea how many people were on that hill. That's when you're in the moment. And he said, I was so caught up in what I was trying to do. And he said, when I see the photos now and I see how many people are on the hill, it's just incredible to me. And anyway, very nice man and a true product of Southern California. So great collegiate player here and great tour career. He was a lot thinner back then. But so it's really cool when it's a true homegrown great. And a little bit overdue for him to have gotten in that. And these Hall of Fames, it takes time sometimes, or there's scheduling stuff or whatever. So it was great.
Yeah, yeah. I can direct people to, there's a podcast called What Makes Great. I think it's now defunct, but it'll be on iTunes, hosted by a guy called Michael Wilson, who was a good player at Cal. He was a golf coach at Long Beach State, and then he's at Colorado State now. Anyway, he had like a 2-hour podcast with Scott Simpson talking about his career. It's absolutely a wonderful listen. So people, if they're interested in Scott Simpson, just incredible career, just incredible life, actually. And really a really, really good guy. Yes. The other thing, people heard you talking last week on the show about Roger Cleveland and the number of messages I got, just about how they'd come across Roger Cleveland somewhere in golf, and what an amazing guy. He's just the nicest guy in the world, obviously.
Yeah, no arrogance. No, yeah. Some of the club designers can be, artsy. They can be artistes, and none of that with him. Just an incredibly nice man, wants to help you get better, help a player get better. And they had a wonderful tribute video that got Roger pretty choked up. Ben Crenshaw and people like that. Although it was interesting, Lawrence, I was standing next to Chip Brewer as it cut to Corey Pavin talking about the Vass irons, and I thought he was done with. I didn't think he had done those irons anyway. I wasn't going to turn to Chip and go, one of the greatest feats in the history of the game that Corey Pavin won a U.S. Open with those irons, those weird looking clubs. I'm still not sure. I've got to research that. I'm still not sure Roger designed those because they're so far from anything he ever did. But anyway, yeah, no, amazing. And I forgot, and he told a story in his speech about when he had sold his company to the skiing company. He was reading through the contract, getting ready to sign it, and right there at the end, it says just flat out, and Roger Cleveland will be terminated immediately as part of this agreement. And he was just taken aback. He signed it because it was he sold it and all that, and then he told the story of how Ely Callaway, who he had known a little bit, when he found this out, immediately called and brought him on to the team at Callaway with, and yeah, I don't think he had a long non-compete deal. So fascinating how stupid some of these companies can be. Why would you be wanting to get rid of the guy who's the namesake and all that? Just dumb, just typical. But they were a skiing company. So anyway, yeah, no, and really just a constant, amazingly a huge figure in club design in so many different ways that I don't think people fully grasp. So it was cool to get him in our hall and recognized.
Yeah, brilliant. Well done to the Southern California Golf Association. Really good stuff. Anything else? I did. I went out on Saturday morning to help watch a bit of the San Francisco City Championship. One time, a great event with some fantastic winners through the years. I think Ken Venturi won it, actually. Sadly diminished. I mean, I'm sorry to say, sadly diminished. But still going strong. I went out. I bumped into a pal of mine who was on the 15th hole in the quarterfinal. He was two down. I said, "Well, why don't I caddy all the way in?" And we proceeded to lose the next hole, and that was it. Game over. So my
Whoops.
caddying lasted for one hole. But it was great to get out there and see that people are still. I mean, I think they had over 200 entries
Wow.
for the stroke play qualifying, which is fantastic. So good on him. As I say, I can't remember. As another pal of mine, pal of ours, he got to the final, but I just noticed this morning that he lost. So bad luck, AJ. And next week, I'll be back to Harding Park, Jeff. It's the Stanford event, the good one. Lots of really good players. Looking forward to seeing Samson Zhang hopefully play for Cal if he bothers to show up, if he's not got some event in Asia. Some pro event in Asia to play in, so hopefully he'll be there. Probably the last time I'll get to see Mikkel Thor Bjørnsen before he ascends to the PGA Tour. Well, he's number one in that PGA Tour university thing, isn't he? So,
Yeah, but it's
so I think
close, isn't it? No.
I think did we talk about this last week? He fell into second place behind the big lump from Georgia Tech, Crystal, and said, "Oh, hang on a minute," and he went promptly went out and won his next. He went out when he's Mike went out when he's yeah. So I think he's one of these guys that he does what he needs to do. So although that won't pass muster on the PGA Tour, he's gonna have to turn up every week because there's you might find that the quality of field is slightly up from the Goodwin or whatever, even the NCAA Championship. Having said that, he might go to the Valspar and run into a pretty poor field quality. However, Jeff, I guess in a week where not much happened in golf, it was really I had a Peter Malnati won the Valspar, obviously, 12 under, beat Cameron Young, yeah, by two. But it was I found myself absolutely glued to the TV all of Sunday afternoon. It was compelling. I don't know the guy. I've only heard him on a couple of podcasts. He's slightly irritating. I found his manner on the golf course somewhat. I think it's just the timbre of his voice. It's like, that high range, constant chatter. But my goodness, it was fantastic to watch. He really hasn't won since, I think, 2015. So it was his second PGA Tour win. Just really brilliant. And the contrast between him and Cameron Young was quite something. I found out afterwards that he was coached by, that Malinati is coached by Bradley Hughes, who's one of my favorite golf teachers. Any guy that can look at Brendan Todd's grip and say, well, no, we're not changing that. And then goes on and Todd wins multiple PGA Tour events, knows what he's doing. So well done to Brad. But the Malnati thing was, did you watch it, Jeff?
I
Did
did.
you spend much time? Yeah, wasn't it? I don't know what your thoughts were.
I don't want to be a broken record, but we've talked about this with several other tournaments this year. It was very rewarding. It was compelling, and I found it more satisfying to watch that conclusion where the win meant something to both the guys at the end, and also a few other players who were, I mean, a lot of people were in contention, and Keith, Cashmere Keith, really wanted to win and get to the Masters, as several players did. Cameron Young was already in, and I thought it just showed you that once again the idea of a life-changing win is just more satisfying to us, maybe not to a casual fan, but I don't know. I think any sports fan watching that and seeing the way NBC's guys do a good job of getting you invested in them, and then you see the emotion come out. I think most people would appreciate that. I guess the only downside is you wish there were a few more stars in contention, because I think that's what we've agree is does add a little more to that drama, but unfortunately it's probably going to be one of the lowest rated PGA Tour events and of all time. I mean, Saturday was against Caitlin Clark and against the March Madness. There was a lot of, and then Sunday was plenty of college basketball, and a lot of people are into that, so and not a lot of stars, so I don't think they're going to get much audience. If the players was hit the way it was, then this is probably going to become a trend. But yeah, just I thought it was wonderful. I thought his interview was amazing. You're right; he's got weird body language. It is definitely. I mean, they had fun with the one where he just basically just couldn't believe how bad a putt he hit, and then it goes in. And he did this all after the Monday trip down to the Bahamas. He got to meet and talk to somebody who was like a real person, like a real human being, His Excellency. I don't know what he was expecting. So maybe he got a little ego boost from hanging out with all those egomaniacs. I don't know.
I noticed you mentioned it in the quad. His record in
Oh,
Innsbruck is
horrible. So that, I mean, yeah, who
oh,
is bad? By the way, what a great example of why you don't bet on golf. I mean, there's a guy with just no track record, and he goes and he wins the thing.
yeah, you're right. The thing that got me, the interview at the end with his son, great name, Dash. Who calls their kid Dash? But there you go. It's really great. So it's some sort of comic book from the 1970s, but actually, wasn't the kid in the Incredibles called Dash? I think he
Yes,
was.
and this kid had a cape on, so I'm assuming it was an Incredibles. And he's just adorable. And I mean, I love the look on his face when he's
That's right.
watching his dad talk. And you're thinking, is he about to go, what? Like, he's either going to wipe a tear, or he's going to go, like, what's wrong with you? Or he was just, and then you kind of look at Kara Dixon. It was great. He was very cute and added to the whole thing. And then I don't know if you read the comments after that Malnati made, but they were really interesting in the post tournament press conference about what events like that mean and who's running it, et cetera, et cetera. That was I'm sure a lot of sponsors were nodding their head, and they've been passing that around this morning after the tournament.
It was you are right about the kid. I'm guessing he's never seen his father cry, in a situation that's meant to be happy. He's probably trying to process the moment, but it was just a magical bit of TV. Of course, I then made the mistake of venturing into the cesspit of Twitter,
Oh, no.
and I mean, yeah, I was just saying, I just loved it so much, and essentially, not the golf, but the just the atmospherics of the moment, Malnati's reaction, he's the kids, the what it all meant to everybody involved. And I was just saying, you know what? You just got to look at this. You know, the LIV Golf, no matter what it does, it will never have what the PGA Tour has. You know, I'm guessing, you know, people, Peter Malnati, that's, you know, accumulation of, you know, when he was a junior golfer, college golfer, it was all, you know, accumulating to that moment. The point being about here. I mean, the point is, again, we're all bored and we yawn and we laugh at the PGA Tour and we make fun of them. But this heritage thing does mean something. And I think that yesterday's events illustrated that. And I said this, and well, I'll let you, I mean, you're going to tell me I'm talking nonsense, of course, aren't you?
No, I think you and I are in agreement that this is something that the tour has that LIV will never have. The problem is the tour is doing everything they can to dismantle it, and that's where I'm just at a loss. And it's, I mean, the year could not have gone worse for the tour in the sense that you really haven't had stars stand out, and the one stars you do have aren't the most thrilling. And then the best events have been the ones highlighting what a full field and a cut. And Cinderella stories, or journeyman coming back, or an amateur breaking through and beating the pros. That all the things that come with a full field and a cut and sponsor exemptions and et cetera, they're trying to dismantle. And you know, I also had a thought too watching this that you're going to see. I realized when I was reading Malnati's comments last night about the Copperheads, the people who run this event, and this is a newer event, let's be honest, but it's been at the same place, same people, same town now for a good run of whatever, 20 years, isn't it, I believe. And it's building something there, a community annual little mini tradition. And I realize that now in this new for-profit venture element thingy that they have, that the events that are run by championship management and the for-profit wing element, even if they're not a signature event, they will get a better placement on the schedule going forward. So events like this that aren't run by the for-profit tournament operations of the tour will continue to be crapped on. And so it's just stuff like that, that behind the scenes, it's hard to see a positive outcome to it all.
I was just putting myself in the suit of a mid-manager at the PGA Tour. I mean, running the tour, I guess you have to seek some kind of balance between content and commerce. I mean, the content, hesitate to call it the content of yesterday's event, you know, what yesterday, you know, how it unfolded. But you did make the point yourself, Jeff, that the TV ratings are going to be awful. They just are. And you know, if I'm at the global home, I look at the, you know, okay, this was a great Sunday afternoon, but my goodness, nobody was watching. We have to change this. I mean, again, the point I'm trying to make is there is some kind of balance. Don't you think there's some kind of balance to be reached? Or it should all just be about just let's run some fantastic events and trust that that will eventually accumulate an audience.
Yeah, it seems like
That
that
makes sense.
ship has sailed to them. And
Yeah, it has, obviously.
I would counter on the rating situation, though, that the most disturbing element of the players' ratings is that they did have the
Yeah.
stars and look what happened, and a compelling finish come, and you had no Tiger comparisons to muddy the numbers, and you had a 5-shot win last year by Scheffler. This year you had a close finish and they were down a very healthy amount, and that has to be, I just, and you know, no NCAA tournament. Yeah, there were college basketball conference tournaments, but that's not nearly as significant as the actual NCAA tournament. And I think that's the first sign we've seen that the wear and tear of all the money talk and kind of the building view that these guys are greedy and unlikable, was seen in the numbers. And there was good weather in a bunch of places, so that people were out playing golf. So they've lost those core golfers that at least get you to a certain number, it looks like. Again, 1 week, we'll see what happens. We'll also see what happens at the majors, if that same kind of weird little drop happens, and you know, there are all sorts of things that go into this, and who knows how they come up with total audience delivery, and then there's Tiger components to some numbers and so on and so forth. But yeah, it'd be a shame if they look at the bad ratings from the Valspar and blame it on the lack of stars, but I'm afraid that's what they'll do.
The okay, I understand that people are paid, you know, $800,000 a year at the Global Home for doing doesn't seem to be very much, and not giving out very good advice to the leaders. But I'm going to ask you, Jeff. So if you're the tour, what do you do?
I mean, it's a very tough situation, but I certainly wouldn't be chipping away at what made the tour great. And that's what they've been doing in response to Live. And I guess they just feel that's the only option they have. I mean, I put in the newsletter today, Sports Illustrated did a ranking of the how we would pay out the how we would rank the equity status of the remaining players who are going to get this 750 million or whatever the number is from the Strategic Sports Group and divvying it up. And it just, oh my gosh, you go, I mean, after Tiger and Rory, you go, there's just nobody here who's moving many needles, in the big scheme of things. And wow, what a, so they're just going to get a check for being in the right place at the right time. I get it. I get why they are doing that, but that's just not much of an investment in what you do. And they're just moving to a model that's hard to see as sustainable on multiple fronts, whether it's the tournament operations, the purse, the sponsorship model in terms of advertising and all that. It's really it's quite a mess. I guess I would have focused a lot harder on trying to explain to once they'd made the decision to try to partner with Saudi Arabia to figure out a way that they don't dismantle it, and all they're doing now is delaying, taking their sweet time, and don't appear to be making much progress, and it's got to be really concerning for a lot of these tournaments.
We will be talking to our friend of the pod, Bob Harrick, later in the show about his new book on Tiger Woods, but we also touch on this whole business. Again, I think we briefly touched on it last week, the big meeting in NASA. You mentioned it there, Jeff. Nothing happened. Isn't that just quite remarkable? Bob, again, don't want to give too much away, but Bob is just, you know, 9 months on from the events of June the 6th. My goodness. Jesus Christ, nothing.
I have an interview in the newsletter tomorrow with Hughes Norton on his new book, and I asked him a question about putting himself, because he addresses Liv in the book, and so I'll let people read the book for his thoughts, and they're very up to date. They're very recent. Obviously, they hit send to the publisher as late as they could, but I said, put yourself in Mark McCormick's shoes, if you don't mind, because, you know, the first part of the book's about essentially his recruitment. Meeting him, his sort of recruitment, and then working with him, and et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, the short answer was he just said, how did they just go down there and not come out of it with something? And he's, yeah, the gist of his answer was Mark would go, guys, look, nobody's going to be happy. Nobody's going to get exactly what they want. Get this done. Deal with this. This is not helping you. Nobody's winning by dragging this out. And I think the tour's suffering more than Liv, because we know Liv doesn't have any kind of a sensible financial model. They just throw money at it so they can afford to do this, I guess, until they get bored. But the tour, they can't afford to act like they're the ones in with the upper hand. They just don't have it right now, and they need to figure out how not to screw up what made them successful in trying to battle this opponent.
Yes, I mean, and it's hard to think when everybody will be in the same room. I guess when you ultimately get that deal done, everybody's going to have to be in the same room, and it's taken 9 months to get everybody in the same room for an informal meet and greet.
Well, and won't it be interesting when they do it again, when Peter Malnati comes in and goes, you know, and now they'll probably counter with crappy ratings, but he'll be able to say, you know, look what I said after the tournament, I meant it. That's the thing that's kind of the core of what we do, and Yeah, I was watching the local news last night before bed, and what did the guy say? Local news guy. Now he knows golf, but he was just, yeah, it's a extended sports report, and he said, going, and when we come back, Cinderella winner at on the tour this week got him in the Masters. More when we come back, and instead of just a sports report on somebody winning another tournament, he threw in that stuff about, it was extra special. And they showed the footage, a little clip of the interview, and the highlights and the great shot, by the way. Forget all that, not just the interview, that amazing bunker shot from the fairway bunker on 18, which,
Fantastic.
as you know, is I think we've, or maybe I haven't bored you with this, but that to me is always when you see the difference between PGA Tour pros and everybody else. It's the way they how well they hit bunker shots from the fairway. Everybody else, just the slightest mishit is exposed. And anyway, so they showed all that, and you're like, well, that was a great highlight on the local news. Now I get it. Local news isn't what it used to be. Newspapers aren't what they used to be, blah, blah, blah. But it's still a thing, and it's something you just wish they'd recognize. So yeah, I think that next meeting will be pretty interesting, especially because he's the first board member to get a top three this year, and certainly the first board member to win a tournament this year.
The a couple of other notes from you're right about the fairway bunker shots, because I think it highlights their concentration. That shot he hit on 18, you're really up your. I mean, it was
Amazing.
just a perfect strike.
So easy to screw that up. So
Yeah.
easy to just miss it a little bit. And I always love that when announcers say, oh, he'll have a good lie in the bunker. I don't care if it's a good lie in a fairway bunker. It's still the foot, the footing is
Yeah.
different. It's just, yeah. And that's where I always just go, yeah, that's where they're on another level. You just don't see many tour pros botch those the way amateurs and even good amateurs sometimes do.
The other notes from I want to ask you about the golf course very briefly, but other notes. I don't know if you saw it, Jeff. There's a lot of chatter about Justin Thomas's putting performance. I think on Saturday, on his way to 78, I think, or what? The longest putt he held was 2 foot 5 inches. I mean, it was quite. I think again, I seem to quote Kyle Porter every week. He does a brilliant job with all this stuff. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you really should. A succession of, all clearly missing all these putts, and it's all the second or third putts, and it's, I think he had 38 putts. I was just wondering if this is karmic, for that bullshit on the, you obviously haven't watched it yet, the full swing thing. I mean, that episode on the Ryder Cup is just mind-blowing to me. Yeah, you're talking about the stars, quotes unquote stars. Thomas is nowhere. Homa's had a pretty lackluster year. Spieth missed a cut again. Oh my goodness. Yeah, God bless Peter Molyneux for giving us something to talk about. The words, sentences I never thought I'd say. God bless Peter Molyneux.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
good for him.
Well, you do have to
Go
wonder
on.
if there's a toll being taken by these meetings and being on these committees. Justin Thomas is back on the pack, so it's not a that's a newer thing. But Jordan's been in on all this. He and Jordan are on the Ryder Cup committee that hasn't picked a captain yet. That's probably not their fault. If Tiger's in the mix, then there's whatever's going on with him, which we'll discuss with Bob. That's probably part of this. And who knows? It could just be as simple as Tiger's just going to drag it out. So he, because the PGA does like to wheel their captains out and around, and he's probably maybe just dragging it out as long as he can to get out of some of that crap. But yeah, Spieth and you and I discussed at the beginning of the year, just getting involved in this stuff at the peak of your career. And I mean, he was one over, and his comments say, "I'm playing well. I don't understand. It's weird." And well, like you said, concentration on those bunker shots, timing, whatever. It could be, it's just there isn't a big difference between making a cut and contending and just missing. And he was only 7 off the lead, by the way. So he'll probably raise his hand in a meeting and go, "That's why we have the 10-shot rule in the signature events." I don't know, but. It's got to be a concerning sign for him, and yeah, his favorite tournament's coming up, the Masters, and he just is kind of all over the place. And then Thomas to have that setback on the putting is just stunning. I mean, that's a lot of putts for a tour pro. And I don't know. It's fun. I just I'm gonna do an interview with Ben Crenshaw soon. I'm gonna ask him about all these mediocre putters without naming names in the game. Because at our Hall of Fame ceremony, the person who came to except for this woman named Millie Stanley, who she just won everything in California amateur and senior golf. She played for Long Beach State when she was 47. She was a player coach. Yeah,
Wow, how good
yeah.
is that?
She grew up in Hawaii with a her father made a wood shafted putter out of a oh, I forgot what kind of tree over there. Anyway, the reason I'm telling this is to the end of her career, she putted with a hickory shafted putter with a severely closed stance. And you just think there's the putting has gotten so mechanical. And so you see so many good looking strokes, but they're not good putters. So why is that? Are they're just lacking something? And most of the great putters of all time were severely would be considered severely unorthodox in today's game. Bobby Locke, George Archer, Ben Crenshaw, Dave Stockton, on and on. I guess Bob Charles was probably the most conventional looking great putter when I think about his actual stroke, but most of them put draw spin on it and weird stances and weird things with their arms, and I've just felt like that for a while with Thomas, that it's just too much trying to be fundamentally right and trying to get all these numbers and stuff, and it's not good to have those numbers this few weeks before the Masters.
I again, this comes about to say I'm going to blame Tiger for that because he did have a pretty orthodox. I mean, though he did draw his putt. So I'm guessing he influenced a lot of people who came after him with his orthodox putting
Yeah,
style. But
I
yeah,
think so.
you're dead. Same with the full golf swing, Jeff. Some of the
Sure.
great players. Well, the best player in the world right now is. I mean, who's going to teach that golf
Yeah,
swing? I mean, Jesus Christ.
exactly.
So there's that. Yeah, that but that'd be I'd love to hear Crenshaw talk about that. You are right. And as I say, Thomas's putting stroke looks pretty normal to orthodox to me, but my goodness, that was quite something. I mean, you don't like to see guys suffer like that. However, you know what? There's a bit of karma in the world, so we'll see. I'm sure he'll. I see we keep on saying Justin Thomas is going to bounce back, but I'm not so sure at this stage. Can I ask you about that golf course, Jeff? Again, it just looked like another PGA Tour golf course reduced to pitch and putt. I got that right?
Yeah, they were they grow a lot of rough there, and the 18th is able to sort of defend itself because it's so narrow.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're hitting it a long way, and yeah, I mean, they always have rough there, that and they always seem to be able to get it pretty dry, which is nice. So it usually gets kind of crispy, and so that's why I thought there was, even believe it or not, a slight chance Tiger might show up there. I mean, it would have been weird to play there and not the Players, but because of his new duties as a vice commissioner. But it's also that's the kind of golf that would be interesting to him, and a great sign of where his game is, and he passed. So yeah, they hit it a long way, and yeah, so they grow rough, and it doesn't seem to really phase them. I saw some nice mashing in the limited amount I watched. I saw a couple. I we're gonna go We're gonna call it dual wielding mashes. The guys who get the two clubs out and go back and forth between the two clubs. It's a dual wielding mash. I won't name names. I don't want to. There's no point. But the one of the contenders was doing that on I would say, yeah, Sunday. Yeah, it was Sunday morning. I just going back and forth. You're like, dude, stop. Stop it. Cut it out. But yeah.
There you
So
go. Actually,
it produces great finishes, Same thing. It's not an architectural masterpiece, but guess what? Every year it seems to always produce a compelling finish. So I'm all for that. And that's all you want is a place that somehow, it's just like Valhalla this year. We'll talk about it till we're blue in the face. Somehow that weird property and everything that goes into it works. It at
the
least for tournament golf.
Well, I absolutely loved it. And of course, I mean, I tweeted out about the interview, and oh my goodness, I think it's seen about 200,000 times or something at this stage. And the responses are so depressing. I mean,
Really?
again,
Oh,
oh
this is
my
why I'm not
God.
on Twitter anymore. That's
Well, yeah, it's not a bad show.
what are people unhappy about? Like, or what?
No. Well, it's more the kind of division. Again, it's just I go on about this all the time. It's just a reflection of life or society these days. I sound like some old fucking idiot, but so people are just so divided. People are picking teams, and it's just they're saying stupid things to support their team. I mean,
I
it's
see.
just quite astonishing. I mean, to me, it's a fairly innocuous remark to say that Liv will never have this. They just can't. It's just a plain fact. But my goodness, and these aren't even bots. We talk about Liv bots, but my goodness. Quite depressing, and not depressing
Well,
for golf. I mean, I
Liv could
imagine.
have it if one of the three players who qualified goes and wins one of the Liv events and then cashes a $4 million check and locks up his place for next year. Yeah, he might cry. There are and that, but what does that tell you? That tells you that the meritocracy element really truly means something.
Yeah, it really does. Just on your point about guys on the pack and the policy board and all this, maybe Rory McIlroy should go back on the committee.
I know he seemed to
You see,
thrive in it. You do wonder, did he? I think it like there was some element it gave him, but no, I think he's very happy doing what he's doing
I'm sure he is.
not being in the middle of it, flying down to the Bahamas for a meet and greet that he already had done a year before with Yasser and yeah, he doesn't need to waste his time on those things at all.
Anyway, I was joking, but
I
on the
know.
other hand, if he's at meetings, he'd be able to avoid Brad Faxon. But anyway,
Well,
sorry.
and the thought, hey, look, the thought has come up that as great as he's been the last couple of years, what and then the way this year started with a lot of birdies and a lot of weird doubles and things that, well, maybe it did give him some sort of off course distraction or on course mojo or something. It's just way too early in the year, I think, to judge. We'll
You're right.
be able to know better after a couple of majors.
Yeah, you are right. And he's still my guy and my guy for the Masters. Well, very quick. We've got to say, we've got Friend of the Pod on this week, so we better just quickly run through other events. You didn't watch this, but you probably do better things to do on a Saturday evening, but I don't. I sat down and watched the Porsche Singapore Classic, to give it its full name, on Golf Channel. One, because I'm sad, and two, because I wanted to see. I feel really bad about this, Jeff, but I'm fascinated by this 17-year-old kid called, I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce his surname, apologies for that, but he's commonly known as TK. He has signed up to go to Stanford in this fall, the fall of 24. He was tied fourth going into the final, which is just quite astonishing. I'm just amazing. Anyway, fell away. I think he shot three over. That was the other thing, Jeff, looking at the leaderboards this week. You drop a shot, and my goodness, I mean, it's a boat race, these tournaments. The thing in Singapore was, oh my goodness, you drop a shot and you're dropping 15 spots. You're two over par and you've dropped 35 spots or something. It's just crazy. But he kind of fell away in the end. I think he finished top 30. I mean, but making the cut, I mean, he played with Eddie Pepperell in the first two rounds and beat him by nine. So it'll be interesting to hear Eddie talk about that this week.
And Eddie's been playing good golf.
So it'll be fascinating to see actually
I think.
whether or not a kid like that goes to college, because I mean, he must have all sorts of options. I hope he does. It might sort of calm him down and prolong his career at the other end. He might make a bit of money in his teenage years, but that would be nothing compared to, if he still loves golf and is really engaged by golf in his late 30s, would be probably much better for him. But I mean, that's the kind of sensible advice that a lot of parents don't take on board. We'll see. The tournament itself was won by Jesper Svensson. My goodness, Jeff, you didn't see it, but this guy is another unbelievable. He's a little bit older than Ludvig, but he played a bit of junior golf with Ludvig. I think he's 28 years old. Oh, just beautiful technique, putts well, hits it absolutely miles. Shot 63 in the final round. Yeah, I think he's just got on. He just got his European Tour card this year. I think he's had two top tens, and then this, or maybe even a top three somewhere. Anyway, this was it was great to watch. He ended up in a playoff with Kiradek Afibamarat. It's absolutely ridiculous, Jeff. I wonder what your view on this. You didn't see, but you must have a point of view on this. The playoff just went round and round on one hole, the 18th hole, 530, 540 yards. I mean, Afa Bamrat had zero chance. He was 50 yards behind the guy off the tee. It was just completely unfair. Funnily enough, actually, one, I think they played three or four extra holes, but one hole, as Svensson had to hole a 4 footer to stay in it. He did it, which is cool. But it was unfair. Why don't they have playoffs and, par three
I
and par
know.
four, par five? I mean, I guess it's just TV or the
Yeah.
build out, or the
Yep.
sponsors don't want to walk over to the they want to see everything there. Anyway,
Well,
I love.
I just hate sudden death in general. I don't think the Masters should be sudden death. Even a two-hole playoff is aggregate is better. And of course, at Augusta, it's absurd because you can just walk right over the 10th tee, play the 10th, and then come right back up the 18th. Yeah, as we know, Justin Rose just comes off his tee shot just slightly, and that's it. The Masters is over. He's played four rounds, all this amazing golf, and one of the hardest tee shots on the planet. And it's just I and so and then of course these tournaments that just play the last hole over and over again is the LPGA is famous for it, and but it's television because common sense would tell you should have an aggregate playoff. That's why I was hoping for one at the Players, because they have a fantastic one. They go right over to 16 tee and they play the last three holes, three of the best finishing holes in the game, and it's the way it should be, and it shouldn't come down to one slight miss. It's you do all that work and all this preaching about the importance of 72 holes, and then people have no problem with sudden death and playing one hole over and over again. It's just weird. It's one of those weird things that but as we tournaments are always scheduled to take it up to the last second on a Sunday, and then television has to go somewhere, so that's why it happens.
We talked to Bob later on about Tiger's. We talk about his injuries and Torrey Pines. Bob writes about it extensively. The 2008 U.S. Open, that was an 18-hole playoff for a major. You think that's? I mean, everybody's got rid of that now, but that was one of the greatest days in golf.
I
I mean, it
know.
really was. But I guess,
I don't miss 18 holes the next day. I
you know.
really don't. I understand it was a great day. It was an amazing week. I was there. I was for the whole thing. I loved it, but I don't miss the potential for that next day thing. I think the aggregate has worked. I don't like the USGA doing, I don't know how they went from 18 the next day to two. My theory was they settled on two holes, because I tried to ask Mike Davis this at one of the U.S. Opens, and I my theory was they picked two because they thought the Masters at some point they worked with them, they talked with them, and the Masters would go to a two-hole aggregate because three and four holes have been shown to be better. There's just something about you. Usually with 3 holes, you get, it's not all par fours. You usually get one par five or par three. And it just feels right. And obviously the RNA still does 4 holes at the old course because it just works better, 1, 2, 17, 18. But so why the USGA went to two, I don't know. I would love to see them do they you know I yeah it's funny, I never did get, oh that's right, no, at LA North it was going to be the first and the 18th because of the first tee being closer, because I said it should be 17 and 18. But so a lot of it's just logistics and TV and stuff like that. But no, I don't miss the 18 hole.
The
Or, I mean, Bobby,
I
do you
remember
remember a
the
couple of they used to go 36 holes the next day,
That's
way
right,
back. Oh, Lordy.
I remember the 2008. I was so annoyed at not being able to fly home because
Oh.
of the whole day playoff. I wrote a piece overnight saying these 18-hole playoffs are a disgrace. They should be abolished today. And then,
Whoops.
whoops! And then you go out, and it was fantastic. Anyway, yeah, anyway. It was a shame because I love Afa Bamrat. I think he's brilliant to watch. Again, completely natural. I mean, there's no technique involved in it. I mean, it's just pure. I mean, he's putting, he's chipping, he's golf swing. Great player, very imaginative, very instinctive, brilliant to watch. It was a really. I think it finished at like 1:30 in the morning. Even my poor wife stayed up. She kind of got gripped. It was
Wow.
really good stuff. There you go. That's what we do. That's a racy life,
Big
Jeff.
Saturday night. Wow.
Big Saturday night. I can show a girl a good time. We'll run on. Actually, a couple of bit of women's golf. This morning I saw it on we. Actually, Jeff, this goes to show we're not tattletales and gossips. We knew this a while back, and we didn't say a word to anybody. Rachel Heck, the Garlandied, one of the best amateur golfers of the current generation, widely assumed to be going to turn pro and have a great pro career, announced this morning on No Laying Up. There's a piece there if you want to go and read it. She's not turning pro, for all sorts of reasons, one of which was, I think, God told her not to, or something like that. I mean, not to, I shouldn't really say that. That's a bit disrespectful.
Well, that's
But
kind of what the piece says, so it's you're just relaying what the piece says.
The and she is gone
The
off
truth.
to she didn't, you know, she didn't say, I mean, she's taken the Hagestad option. She's gone into some sort of private equity thing. So good luck to her. She was a great player. Saw her a few times playing. Oh my God, she was pretty excitable, but my goodness, she was really good to watch, and obviously a fabulous player. I don't know how many times she's won at Stanford, but plenty. But ally, this coming after news that Soyeon Ryu announced her retirement over the weekend. A really nice look. Go and read it if you haven't read it. If you're listening to this, you've probably read it. But it was, great player. Loved. I mean, never really had came across her, but I know people who have and have been around her, and just a fantastic person, unbelievable golfer, fantastic golf swing, just
Yeah.
great player to watch. I've just, it's odd, Jeff. We talked about it before. Women seem to, compared to men, men hang on forever, but women golfers, if they're getting out, they're getting out, aren't they?
I think they have through history. That's just been, they tend to turn pro a little bit younger, and they tend to, when they realize it's time, and there's obviously sometimes a biological element, they decide they want to have children. And then in the case of a lot of the Korean women, the amount of travel they do, and I know from talking to Soyeon at Wilshire last year, she was kind of already, reaching this point. It's, and they want to play both sides in Korea and the US, and it wears them out. I mean, they had, I don't know if you saw any of the women yesterday, but it was a great finish, and Nelly Korda won, but GA Shin played on a sponsor's invite, and she's been playing in Korea a lot. And what a, I forgot what a she's just a great spirit, big smile, a lot of waving and hugging, and she's not the prototypical, like Soyeon Ryu, not the prototypical very buttoned up Korean golfer that's very behind the shades kind of thing. And what a great, personality. And she's Grant Boone was saying on the broadcast, she's debating between, really would like to, and Morgan Pressel said too, would like to play in the US a little bit more, but the travel is, we just take that for granted, how severe that can get. They're not flying private jets, and it wears them down. And even though they're big stars, that's the other thing, they're big in their own country. So I just think women tend to start at this a little bit sooner than men, and they tend to burn out a little bit faster. And I don't think there's anything, I don't think it's that different. I do think we're going to see more of it, both men and women, just because of the way the game works with injuries, and that's a shame. But the swinging harder and the money, making it easier to call it quits, is definitely going to be a thing. That said, then right after the women were on, I watched the end of the men. I why is Padraig taking a cart, by the way, on the Champions Tour? That was a little weird.
I
I don't know
have
if
no
he got
idea.
a bad knee or something. Anyway, but you know what? Watching him and Miguel Angel and Chung Cheh JD, they're grinding it out, trying to win, and they were playing with as much. But there's something to remember that too, because I used to talk about this with John Guyberger and Al Guyberger. You watched the men would always hit a wall at 45. I mean, they would just lose it, and then they'd kind of for about they disappear for a few years. And then when that Champions Tour option came around, they'd find it again. And it just shows sometimes you just need to get away from it. So it seems like it used to be about a 20-year career arc. And now I think it's about 10 to 12. So Anyway, but seeing those guys still grinding, it wasn't a nice day here. The weather was awful for both the women and the men. Great scheduling there, by the way, having the women in Palos Verdes and the men and the champions in Orange County. Jeez, Louise. I thought there was supposed to be an alliance between the tours to, but just there, you know, Padraig was playing. I mean, he gave it a fist pump that was almost identical to the one he gave at which one was it? Was it Oakland Hills? It was like
Yeah,
the
that's
Oakland
right.
Hills. And he was grinding and totally into it, and you gotta love it. You gotta admire
I
that
was
they're
gonna.
still
That was
doing it.
ex yeah. That was exactly my mind. You gotta love it. If you don't love it,
It's
you'll
just seeing them,
it'll weird.
yeah. And that's why I get so annoyed when people want to crap on. Oh, we go. You're in the Champions Tour. This is money. Oh, stick. Do you know? I mean, how cool is that? That you know, people get to watch athletes in their 50s still performing. Still looking pretty much like they used to. I mean, other than John Daly cold topping it off the first tee. I don't know if you saw that video. Ooh, that
No.
was awkward. They get to see these people yeah, some of it's a nostalgia thing, and they go out and see John Daly and roll their eyes or whatever. But there's Padraig and Miguel Angel, and these people just trying so hard to win still. It's what they do and what they love to do. And I think it's a thing that golf has that other sports don't have, and it should not be killed because of the private equity people are coming in to get the thing lean to the bone and all that BS.
Anyway, Godspeed to Soyeon Ru. Just a brilliant presence around golf. As I say, one of the best swingers at a golf club you'll see around. And I guess hopefully God will sit Rachel Heck down and tell her a few things about the world of private equity. I noticed she's off to do an internship in the world of that particular ungodly profession. So good luck to her as well. We should wrap this up, Jeff. I did write as people give the secret away, people, I did write a schedule down, but we're way over time. We talked to Bob Harrig about Tiger and the Ryder Cup captaincy thing. It's weird, though. Can I ask you this, Jeff? We didn't talk to Bob about this. Tiger doesn't take it. Who gets it? Phil?
No. Even Phil took himself out of that running. Come on. I mean, Phil can read the room. I gotta think it's Stewart Cink. It seems like he's
Oh,
the one
that's
guy who's
yeah.
worked the last few. I think Tiger's gonna do it. I really do think he just wants to drag it out as long as he can so that he doesn't have to do or he's negotiating with the PGA. Look, I am not coming and doing every single one of these
Yeah.
things you have the captain do unless you're, this is ridiculous. This thing will not need promotion, you know. Give me a break. I'll do the press conferences. But I thought it was really weird they released these rankings. And generally, I mean, I get it. It's what they've been doing, and they just called it a ranking. They didn't, yeah, so they're being careful with the wording, but it's a little weird because they usually announce this by early February or late January of whatever the year before. So, but they'll be fine. They have options. I mean, Stewart Cink will do it if he won't do it, I think. After that, I don't know. But there are people who want to do it.
I'm quite disappointed you're diminishing Ryder Cup rankings, Jeff, at this stage. I mean, Peter Malinati would have been sitting there all morning looking at he's probably at the top of the Ryder Cup rankings at this stage.
It was quite a. Did you look at it? It was quite a U.S.
No.
team. If the team were made today, it was not. It was not. It was. I think Doug Gim was 10th in the points. So
He would
off
be
his.
awesome.
Yeah. It. So yeah, they've long way to go.
Course, he's got match play experience. He was a member of the famous 2017 US Walker Cup team. Fantastic team.
They have not
Okay, Jeff.
updated the rankings as we speak. So
Oh, really?
the results from Innsbruck have not been added. But yeah, Maverick McNealy's on the team right now as we speak. Saith Taylor Montgomery. Where did Taylor get the points to be seventh?
Well, if it's a putting contest, all my money's going on the US if Taylor Montgomery's playing. Right, Jeff, enough.
All right.
Very quickly, two things just to sign off. One, nobody cares about this apart from me, but I did notice that the so-called Masters of Junior Golf was won by the Italian kid, Giovanni Benaghi. Second place, Louis Klein from the Czech Republic. Third place, Joshua Bai, New Zealand.
Wow.
Any think there's any kind of trend there, Jeff? You noticing any kind of trend?
Huh. That's you. Are you? I think you're trying to make me be the one to say that the AJGA kids are we're training a generation of soft
Yeah.
AJGA kids. Is that what you're trying to get me to say?
Well, a little bit. Oh, actually, in fourth place was Geraldo Gomez from Mexico.
Wow.
It was interesting. These kids are coming from all around the world. Haven't seen this golf course before,
Well,
and never probably played in the conditions. And you know what? Anyway, the
they're
other.
doing the USGA a favor with their new initiative to have a national federation team. So they're making the case for them.
Yeah, can't come soon enough with your old mate Chris Sambry running it. Good luck to him. Right, the last thing, Jeff, before we hand over to a friend of the pod, Bob Harrig and his book. And this is a local note really for me. Congratulations to all of those who started the campaign to save Dalmuir Golf Course, a little golf course, municipal golf course in the outskirts of Glasgow. Among the people, well, it was started by our friend of the show, Michael McCune, who's the deputy editor of Bunker magazine, great podcast, Michael, and Craig Connolly, a longtime PGA Tour, European Tour, and now LIV Tour caddy, who grew up, both those guys grew up playing that golf course. Other signatories, I think the word I'm looking for is John McGinn. You won't know who he is, but he's the Scotland international football team captain, and Sergio Garcia.
Wow.
Anyway, the sight of Sergio's signature terrified the life
Well,
out of these penny-pinching politicians. So Dalmuir Golf Course saved. I mean, just a quick point, Jeff. This is a universal point. Just the importance of municipal golf, far beyond the golf. As a focal point for the community, place to go and play golf, affordable place to go and play golf. It's amazing to me that local politicians or whoever would look at a facility like that and go, no, we this is not what we need. It's just
they don't go out
frightening.
there. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, but
And there's a view of the game. Yeah. I mean,
I was
look at Sergio's also lent his name to the Save Muni situation in Austin, which is dragging on now in year 7 or 8. You have Ben Crenshaw. You have all these people who've put together things saying, look at this, don't do this. And the University of Texas is just dying to develop it. And it's not just city governments. I learned at the SCGA Hall of Fame, Lawrence, because the SCGA has this amazing group of people who this is all they do. They have 14 courses right now on their list as under threat that they are. And these things come out of nowhere. You cannot believe one of the ones that happened recently, and they appear to have fended it off. 14 courses, and everything here is full. Of course, we won't get into the tee time controversy right now, but it's astonishing, and it's a problem for the sport. It's as USGA and the RNA, I think we're probably a little complacent for many years on this, not seeing where this was going. And the RNA is certainly trying to catch up. I think the USGA could up their game though a little bit more on it. I think it would really make people love the USGA and appreciate what they do and send them money, which is something they want.
Well, you're dead right about. Amazingly, Sergio Garcia's back in this thing in Dalmuir. It makes me love Sergio Garcia, and that is some going,
Yeah, good for
Jeff.
him.
I mean, good for
Yeah.
him. Anyway, good for everybody who saved the golf course. We'll leave it at that, Jeff. We now move on to we've got a friend of the pod, Bob Harrig. He's written a new book called Drive. You did an interview in the Quadrilateral this morning, Jeff. People haven't subscribed to the Quadrilateral, they really should. It's fantastic, absolutely essential reading for anyone who's interested in just the majors, though, Jeff. You just do the majors,
Yeah,
isn't that right?
just the majors. Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
Anyway, we will move on with Bob and his brilliant new book, Drive. This week's friend of the pod, Mr. Bob Harrig, author of Drive, the lasting legacy of Tiger Woods, out tomorrow. That is Tuesday, out today, because this will be published. You'll be listening to this right now. I'm just looking at the reviews. Bob, Goodreads calls it captivating and emotional. I'm going to concede to you that I was captivated, but I didn't shed a tear. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, I don't know if it's emotional. Yeah, exactly. It's maybe if you didn't know the full story of coming back in 2019, you might consider that emotional. But yeah, it's yeah, I don't know if I would have described it that way, but nice of them, I suppose.
Hi, and you got, I think it's a 4.9 or something on Goodreads. That's pretty good, mate. I'm
Yeah,
speaking as
that is
somebody
good.
who's sitting on a 3.6 or something.
Yeah,
It's a
me
bit like
too. 3.7 here. But nobody's counting.
Anyway, Bob, really enjoyed the book, but we'll come on in a minute. I would be remiss, or we would be remiss, if we didn't. You've been one of the guys at the forefront of covering the whole, I don't know what to call it at this stage, a saga, drama, whatever. There was a meeting last week in the Bahamas, with all the players in the PGA Tour LIV drama. What's going to happen, Bob? Or what is happening? Tell me.
To me, it seems like we're almost back to the beginning. It doesn't seem like we're any farther along than we were 9 months ago because there was no substantive discussions that I could gather, unless they were completely, trying to throw us off, which is possible. But it sounds like this was a meet and greet with Yasser. They wanted to get a sense of what he's all about. They wanted to get a sense of what his vision was. I would have thought his vision would have been explained to the PGA Tour Policy Board, and whether the players heard it directly from him or not, that would have been explained to them by now. Like, whatever it is he wants, you would have thought that this would be out there by now. And I had a chance to talk to Webb last week at Innsbruck, and same with Malnati. They were both very sort of coy. They weren't going to let out any secrets. But it was pretty clear that they don't believe that we're anywhere close. Like they weren't saying that they won't get close, but it sounds like there's work to be done. And after all this time, that's surprising to me. And I even asked Webb that. I said, how did we get to this point? And he shifted to that their focus became the SSG investment. They felt like they needed to get that done first. Okay. That's not going to happen in a day or two. It needs time. A couple, and that clearly consumed the fall. It was announced in January. But of course, while they were doing that is when LIV swooped in and signed Jon Rahm and then Hatton and, a couple other guys. So are they kind of starting over? I mean, I don't know. I mean, Tiger and Yasser apparently played golf. I mean, did Tiger get a sense of what he wants? Because the indications are that Tiger has been pretty staunch and really fighting for the tour and making sure the tour is not diminished. So it'll be interesting to see, assuming Tiger is at the Masters, what he says about where we are at this point.
It'll probably say nothing, but that's 9 months, Bob. Who's slow play? Is somebody slow playing this deliberately?
I would think if it's being slow played, it's being slow played by the tour, because they
But
have the
why?
money now. They have the investment. You heard guys like Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott say, maybe they shouldn't have said this, but they said at Pebble Beach, look, we might not need the PIF investment. Now they were talking about from a financial standpoint, of course, but in terms of the money part, yeah. But if you're just looking internally and yeah, hey, all the players are going to get rich, yeah, great, you're fine. But like, what does it mean for the game? And I asked that question of Webb at Bay Hill a couple of weeks ago. I think the words were, do you consider it dangerous to not do a deal with them? And he said, yes, very dangerous. So, okay, you're admitting it's dangerous. All right. So, and he had then, and the other day when I talked to him here, he said, look, I'm uncomfortable because of the poaching of players. And if we don't make a deal with them, what's going to happen? So, yeah, it's a pretty good thing to feel uncomfortable about, I'd say, because Because in the short term, certainly Liv and the Piff can make things uncomfortable if they keep bringing a few more players over.
We should really move on. I've got one more. I don't know if Jeff's got something, but I've got one more thing that's puzzling me is we've talked about, the balance. You've got this conflict, you've got the balance of power. I was watching, we talked about earlier in the podcast, I was watching, for some reason, I ended up watching the golf yesterday and I found it. And I thought I watched it and Malnati won and it was just quite a, I thought it was an amazing event. I just thought, or maybe if Yasser's at home watching this, he kind of understands that the PGA Tour maybe has the advantage now in terms of leverage. I mean, I wonder where you think the, because Yasser looks at that, he says, I can never have that. I will never have that. And I wonder if the PGA Tour might be right to think that, well, we've actually, we might not have more money, but we've got certainly got, more pack. I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but more impact, more, again, I've spoken about it, authenticity, heritage. And I thought that yesterday really emphasized that. So I wonder if PGA Tour might just have the upper hand
Well, I
again.
mean, from that standpoint, yes. I mean, they're going to have the stories. They're going to have the stories that have context and meaning. Malnati's win, gets him in the Masters. It gets him in the PGA Championship. It has impact in terms of his career. A guy who wins on LIV, let's say a younger player out there who's never won, it's going to be life-changing in terms of money, and it's going to be meaningful as a professional victory. But what does it mean beyond that? Like, that's the thing that they face. Frankly, it's why I'm surprised they gave up their quest for world ranking points. Even if you were getting minuscule world ranking points, it still means something when you earn them through a victory, and then you. Them to anything else you might get, and it might help you in the big. There's with being so young, there's no context. There's just no, it just, it's just money.
Yeah, it's anyway, we will again follow with interest. It's quite amazing. We're 9 months on and we're maybe 5% of the way along the journey. It's just quite mind-blowing. We will get on the book, Bob. As I say, I got it on Friday. I haven't quite got to the end, but I've read a lot of Tiger books. I'm sure we all have. This one's kind of different, Bob. I thought it was pretty smart. Actually, I'll ask you this first and then I'll let Jeff jump in. How hard is it to write a Tiger Woods book? But A, because there's been quite a lot of books written. You go all the way back to Tom Callahan's book, Tiger's own, instruction books, and
Yeah.
all this stuff. But A, because the market is quite crowded, and B, because he gives nothing away to the extent I think he's even, has he pulled the plug on his own autobiography or has he paused it or whatever?
Yeah, it's at the very least it's paused his memoir. The same guy who did is it Prince Harry, his book? That was who was working
That's
on it
right.
with Tiger, and it's not it's 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 been put on hold or maybe killed altogether. I'm not sure. Look, how hard is it write? How hard is it write any book? For me, how hard is it write?
Yeah.
How hard is it to write 500 words? I mean, come on. But I understand what you're saying because it's Tiger and there's been a lot of this ground covered, no question. But that's why I kind of went at this angle. It's not a biography. It's not meant to dive into his personal life. It was at first the idea was I thought there was a whole book in just the 2019 Masters win. It's so different than any of his other majors. And the backstory and the surgery and getting to that point and having what he went through to me was a story in itself. But as I got to thinking about it, I'm like, his whole career has been made up of, if it's not comebacks, it's resiliency, it's the title drive. You got to have a lot of drive to make a cut for 7 straight years because every player out there has had a Friday where they get a couple over par, they're not playing great, they're tired, they're over it, they don't like their hotel room, they miss their family, whatever. I'll go work on my game this weekend. They're thinking about their flight and they want to get out of there. It's human nature. I mean, for 7 years, that never happened to Tiger. I mean, surely there were many, many times where he made the cut easily, but there were, a good number where he's coming down the stretch and he's got to, he's got to really grind to make it, and he always did. And even the time that he finally missed, which was at the 05 Byron Nelson, playing on the other course there that they used to play, he just kind of had a one of those rough days, and he was on the cut line, and he hit it in a bunker on the 18th hole, and he left himself about an 8 footer, and he finally missed it. He finally missed, and he didn't make the cut. Even that wasn't like he blew up and missed by three, So and the other thing is I was just messing around with this on Twitter the other day. In the entirety of Tiger's career, which is what, 25, 7 years as a pro, he's missed 23 cuts worldwide. Just 23. Like Jordan Spieth has missed 45. I mean, only 23 cuts. Now I got, well, how many times did he miss a, did he make a cut or miss a cut where, or when he withdrew, when he was going to withdraw? Tiger's had a lot of WDs, 13 in his career. Most of them have been since 2010. And I counted up 5 times where he withdrew before the cut, but none of those occurred during the streak. They've all been since 2010. But that means there's 8 of them where he withdrew after the cut. So like that number, well, people are like, oh, well, he's not playing well, he would just withdraw. Well, like even the most recent one is at Riviera. We don't know if he would have missed the cut there or not. He was on the cut line or one over it 6 holes into his round. He could have made the cut. But obviously they don't count that as a missed cut, but it also wouldn't be counted as a made cut. So, like, had that happened during the streak, it would have ended. The streak would have ended. So, the fact that he went 7 years, knowing his injury history now, and he never had an injury problem. Frankly, this is the greatest thing about Jack, that he went all those years. I think he withdrew from one Tiger, or Jack withdrew from one major in his entire career. The fact that Tiger actually made it through the early part with no injury withdrawals is pretty incredible.
So I should explain to people that the book is, again, pretty smart idea, a very smart idea actually. The book is told episodically, so you will take Lewis' cut streak and concentrate on that. There's a really interesting, no idea, interesting chapter on your search for medical treatment. I mean, you think Tiger Woods would just have the? You've spoken to a ton of people as well, but I made a little note. The only guy that used to appear outside, I mean, not inside the camp, the Woods camp. The only guy you haven't spoken to was the guy who played the body double at the sex clinic. Remember they staged that photograph of the
Yeah, no, I didn't, I only touch on the scandals or the negativity in terms of how he came back from them.
Yeah,
You know,
that's
like
yeah.
I, you know, one of them, obviously, it's hard to write the Tiger story and not talk about 2009, right? The 2010 period when he had the marital scandal. Obviously, I don't go do a deep dive and go into all the details, but I note that, he had this scandal that kept him from playing golf for 5 months. And he came back at the Masters and finished fourth, which I found remarkable because Tiger hadn't played. And if he'd had his act together at all, he might have won. But his swing was off and he got down on himself. One of the rare times where Tiger actually maybe didn't have the drive. In that final round, Hank Haney said, he was going through the motions on the range that last day. He was pissed. He was pissed he wasn't closer. He was pissed he was chasing Phil on a course where Phil was really good, is just as good as Tiger. And he was mad at himself. Whereas Tiger probably should have looked at the big picture and recognized, I got no business being in contention here. I haven't played. I've been through hell here. I put myself out there. I've been ridiculed across the globe. And you're going into the final round of the Masters with a chance? It was really, it's an underrated performance in his career.
Yeah, I look reading it. 68 in the first round. Jesus Christ. I mean, that is when you think of it, put that in context. Actually, we talked about the scandal. And I really want, I'm talking too much here, but just to talk about Tiger's pathology. So you've got the scandal, but part of the scandal was accentuated by his lack of communication in the years before that. I mean, there's a story elsewhere in the book about he's got some golf course, and there's a gaggle of reporters around him, and he's asking you, when are you going to have your next, when are you coming back to play? And Tiger said, well, I'm not really sure. And Tiger knew that the very next day he was going in for back fusion surgery, which, I mean, that's just, I mean, it's not a bold-faced lie, but it kind of is. you know, and I just wonder, you know, where does this aspect of his character come from? What did he have some sort of early age trauma? You know, we've all been there in gaggles with Tiger, and I mean, it's like pulling teeth doesn't even come close. And that particular anecdote in the book was mind blowing to me. That summed him up. I wonder, where does that aspect of his character come from? This, you know, obsession with secrecy.
Yeah, you know, part of it, I think, stems from the privacy part. I mean, he's just, you know, he's just not going to let you in. But that example you're talking about, which was before the spinal fusion surgery in 2017, every step of the way in 2017, he withdrew from Dubai, went all the way over there, played one round, didn't make a birdie, shot 77, looked terrible, wasn't honest about feeling terrible, and then the next day withdrew. So every step of the way after that, they led you to believe that he was trying to play. And maybe he was, but like they never just said he's going to be out for months. The Riviera deadline came and went. Nope. Bay Hill came and went. The Masters. Nope. Can't do it. And then a couple weeks after the Masters, he was in Branson, Missouri for a golf course thing. That's what you're referencing. And he gets asked about, you know, hey, how you doing? You know, how you feel? Well, you know, I'm strong. You know, I'm not sure when I'm going to be back. Well, obviously, he had scheduled. He was left from there to go to Dallas for this surgery. The only look, I'm not defending him, but I'm trying to you try to understand him. My guess is that if he answers that question honestly there, that's all the questions he's going to get. And it's going to be a shitstorm. And the reason he's there is going to get overshadowed. Like he's there to promote this design project, right? So he's figuring, okay, for at least for a day, this is going to get the attention. And then, you know, that's the only reason why you would handle it that way.
But I get very, very well put and very well argued. But I mean, there's incident after incident after incident. I mean, he's just part of it, part of his, you know, part of his career, part of his personality. The other thing to talk just quickly, talking about the scandal, I mean, it was huge. In retrospect, probably way overblown. I mean, because he was a celebrity, maybe not overblown. But I wonder if what preceded that in terms of his dealings with the media, these kind of obfuscations, these quotes and quotes, not lies, is putting it too strong. I wonder if that was all setting him up for what followed post-scandal. And I want to ask you, you've dealt with him for 2 decades. You've dealt with these people for 2 decades. Do you think he was well served by his handlers through the years?
That's a hard one. I think you got to remember who the boss is. And my sense all along is that they could have been telling him something that he wasn't going along with. Because during the time of the scandal, I think it's pretty clear now that we know that that probably was not handled properly. Yeah, you know, to have the thing at Sawgrass, which was universally chided, to say nothing for months, to do two sort of bogus, you know, 5-minute interviews with ESPN and the Golf Channel. Some of the announcements when it occurred really dumped on other tournaments. You know, a lot of that was just not done properly and did not serve him very well. But we don't know that his people weren't telling him this is what we need to do. And he's saying, nope, we're going to do it this way. And if he's the boss and wants to do it that way, no matter what they say, it's not going to matter. So maybe someday somebody will fill us in on that. But, you know, leading up to all that, I mean, I remember this talking to people. Tiger was pristine. There was like virtually no hint of anything. And I think that's why it caught so many people off guard. And I think there was a bit of a misnomer that he portrayed himself as a big, you know, all-American family man. No, he didn't. He really portrayed himself more as a champion. you know, he's the all-time champion of everything. And that was sort of the endorsement portfolio. And everything had gone perfect at that point. And he became a bit of an easy mark when things went bad.
Bob, thanks for being here. I apologize for screwing up the title, but I want to focus on the title and my question. Because you do center on this theme of him being of drive and driven, which was the title I tried to give your book in my newsletter today. It feels like something's like, I don't know why. I have a sense. I'm curious if you have it too, where we haven't gotten a Ryder Cup announcement, where it seems like he would have been the logical pick. We're kind of past due for that. And he didn't play his once a month schedule. I'm just feeling like something's happened with his motivation and drive. Is that a vibe you're picking up too?
I don't know what to make of all of it, frankly. I mean, could he be that involved in these tour negotiations that it would distract him to this point? You know, it's kind of amazing to think he never even got a Ryder Cup question at Riviera. You know,
well, that was a weird session too, though. He was kind of flat, and it turns out he probably was. They all probably got each other sick in that meeting, but you're right. Yeah, he didn't get one.
You know, and although he had said in the Bahamas, you know, he completely blew it off because we got to get through all this. Well, this might not all be decided before the Ryder Cup next year. So like, I think they're going to have to figure something out here. You know, you're right. A lot of it doesn't make sense to me. Like during all this time, you know, Tiger would have, I guess maybe what we learn about Tiger is if he commits to something, he's not going to, you know, he's not going to shortchange it. And so maybe he's put in so much effort on the off the course stuff that he's neglected the on the course stuff, because there's no indication that there was any kind of injury or back or foot issues keeping him from the Players, but maybe his game wasn't ready. Mm. He didn't feel good about taking his game out there. And I'm like, wow, really? You could let yourself not get ready, give yourself every chance? That surprised me. And, you know, and frankly, if he's not raring to go at Augusta, it would surprise me.
He was walking so well at Riv too, you know.
I thought
that was
so.
Thing, right?
I mean, I thought he was, and yeah, look, he brought it on himself when he said that he had some back spasms a little bit late in the round. That one of them led to that shank on 18 on the Thursday,
right?
But there was, I saw no indication of that in any swing I saw him take. You know, like he didn't come out of it funny. He didn't flinch. So. Was there a little bit of hyperbole there when he said that, or was there something? And look, it led to a lot of people thinking the next day that he was hurting and that he withdrew and he made up the thing about being ill. I don't think he did. I saw him out there. Nobody goes to the bathroom five times two times within 5 minutes on the fifth green. If there's not something amiss. And so then, you know what, 15 minutes later, he withdraws. I can see him being sick. I buy that. But what's unclear is the whole thing about what's going on with not playing, with not holding to this once a month schedule. And now you're going to show up with 24 holes under your belt at Augusta. You're going to try to be competitive with Scottie Scheffler. You know, good luck. It's going to be tough.
Yeah, and you and I will be there Sunday afternoon waiting for him to show up. Did you enjoy doing this book? Did you enjoy going back through these stories? I mean, you'd just done Tiger and Phil and then this one.
I enjoyed being done with it.
Well, of course, we know that's always the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there's some of that stuff I lived through and you know, it was kind of a fun reminder of what it was. I mean, you know, just some of the things that he did, you know, obviously 2008 at Torrey Pines. And, you know, I wasn't there for all the cut streak because I wasn't covering as many of the tour events back then, but obviously we were all aware of it. And to do a deep dive into that again and talk to others about it, it was like, you just sit there and, you know, I talked to Jack about it and I asked him about cuts. There's an anecdote in there where he told a story like, you know, Jack, I talked to him at the Masters last year. Jack remembered it like it was a week before. And he starts talking about the 1968 PGA, or I think it was that. And he was like, you know, it was hot and I wasn't feeling great. And, you know, it's like my game wasn't good. And I got to the 36th hole and I had a putt to make the cut. And I actually let it go through my mind that I didn't care if I made it or not. And he said, and so I said, and I didn't remember the story. And so I didn't know the answer. I said, well, did you make it or did you miss it? And he said, oh, I missed it. And he goes, I immediately regretted it. I re immediately regretted thinking that. And I never let that happen again, you know? And so I thought the cut story was, you know, it was just sort of instructive as to Tiger. And then the other one, if you read the chapter on when he made the 10 at Augusta, the 12th hole. I mean, I
That's
just thought
right.
there was so much to that. I mean, not just the 10, but you know, it was his, he was defending the great 19 victory, but it's during the COVID year, so it had been delayed. There's no fans out there. It was awkward, eerie. Tiger fallen out of contention on Saturday. It's his last tournament of the year. You know, what's he got to play for? It's not like, you know, he's trying to build on anything. And then he knocks a couple in the water at the very hole that really kind of won him the tournament the year before. Imagine if he'd have done that on Sunday in 2019. Hit it in the water on 13. He actually hit two in, three in, and made 10, his highest score ever. And he birdies five of the last six.
That's right.
And I just was looking for an anecdote, and I went and I found Scheffler and Lowry, who played with him that day. And their quotes on that to me were so good that I turned it into a chapter. Like Shane Lowry said, I still, you know, it was like when I talked to him for this anecdote, it was like 2 years later. And he said, I still think back to that day because he said, whenever he told the story about it, the Dunhill Links playing Kings Barnes in a gale. He said, I was like seven over through eight holes. And I thought I was going to shoot my highest score ever. And it was miserable. And I thought back to that day with Tiger. And I gutted it out. And I actually was really proud of the score I shot that day because I remembered what he did. You know, Tiger birdied five of the last six. Scheffler says some of the best iron shots he's ever seen. And you know, that it just kind of, Tiger has a lot of pride. You know, so like when Tiger goes out there and people, you know, you hear this now, like, when's he going to quit? Are he's going to embarrass himself? You know, first of all, I think Tiger sort of has earned the right to embarrass himself if he wants to. But yet, I don't know that he will. You know, if Tiger goes and shoots 75 or 77 or 8 at Augusta, is that embarrassing yourself? I mean, it's a hard golf course. Look at what he's been through. So anyway, I thought that chapter sort of epitomized Tiger. You know, it's not anything that's in the record books. It's not one of his victories, but it kind of points out, you know, how his mind works.
Here, another one I point readers out to is the one on the 85 at Muirfield. I remember that vividly, and to think that he came back all the way back from that. The whole book is really a story of comebacks. I mean, from various bits and pieces. The other thing I loved about the book, Bob, was to really let you go. You're talking about Shoffley and Lowry there, but it was great reading Guy Boris and. Was it bright? Is it Briney Beard? Oh, so Tiger's career has scanned all these guys. Generations of guys have come and gone, and he keeps on keeping on. He gets knocked down. He comes back from all sorts of shit. The chipping yips. I mean, there's a great quote from Shambly about, nobody comes back from the chipping yips. Nobody. And yet, pff, I
You
mean,
know,
he's
that sort of reminds me of the, you know, what we were talking about at the beginning a little bit, like why the history of the tour kind of matters so much to Tiger, and why, you know, there's no record without the foils, without the Peter Malnatis of the world. You know, you have to, there's a lot of Peter Malnatis, and sometimes they rise up and win. And to get the record that you have to beat them. And especially when you're doing it in a full field, it makes it even more impressive. And Tiger, I think, understands that his legacy is tied to, you know, I realize it's hard to compare eras, but if you think of how few players, probably since, take, you know, go back, like since Jack, really, how many players have won 40 times on the PGA Tour? You know, Tom Watson got to 39. You know, all of the guys with 50 and more Not even Phil got to 50. Billy Casper, you know, they played decades ago when it was no depth and you could rack up more wins. To win 80 times, 82 times
Yeah.
this far on is just, you know, it's incredible. So anyway, you know, that's why I think Tiger's trying to preserve some of that. Like if you diminish the PGA Tour, if you have too many cut tournaments that don't have cuts, it's not what he was doing. It's not what Jack was doing.
Yeah, I was just, I mean, I'll dive out after, but my one is, does he have one more comeback in him? I mean, Jeff alluded earlier that, you know, this looks pretty, this, we've said it a million times, this looks really ominous, but this really does look kind of ominous, doesn't it, right now?
Yeah, it does. It absolutely is ominous. I've left it out there that I think Tiger's going to give us one more magical moment. It doesn't necessarily mean a win, but like, you know, Nicklaus tied for sixth at the Masters at age 58. That was a magical moment. That was like amazing that he was able to do that. He beat Tiger at Augusta the year after Tiger won his first Masters. He finished ahead of Tiger at age 58. Like, I think Tiger might do something like that. Like what he did at Carnoustie in 2018, where he took the lead briefly and fell, you know, fell short. I think that's possible for him. But to win, first of all, he's not playing regular events. You know, if you would enter the Valspar, or if you would enter, you know, a tournament where the fields aren't so strong, maybe. You know, but you're coming back and playing against the best fields, and they've been practicing and playing, and you haven't. It's a pretty tough task. But again, I'm reluctant to say never because I think, you know, you set yourself up for looking bad.
You want anything to finish off with, Jeff?
No, thank you, Bob. Sounds like you're popular. Hopefully,
Sorry about that.
no worries. Thanks for doing the book, and thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, guys.
It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road. It's a wide open road.